Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
Let's do it.
It's Relationship Therapy with Rachel Cook.
It is sex and relationship therapy time. Yes, and this is a little ears warning. Remember, you can catch our podcast after the show if you people have a sensitive nature around you while you're listening right now. Turn over. Because it's going to be a good one. This one is definitely for grown-ups because today we are asking, what is great sex and how can we get better at it? You know, I'm asking for a friend. Our resident sex and relationship expert, Rachel Cook, has all the answers. Hi, Rachel. How's it going?
Hiya, Jen. Oh, I love talking about great sex. What better things could we be talking about on a Wednesday morning?
But what defines great sex?
Oh my God, so many things. I think for a lot of people, it is about great communication, trust, mutual pleasure and satisfaction, consensual exploration of desires, lots of connection, intimacy. You know, there's so many things that great sex can be that people sometimes assume that what it means is having great technique in bed. And actually, it's very little to do with that. Partly because the same technique is not going to work on all people. But also, if you're focusing too much on technique, you're usually in your head rather than in your body. And it's usually being really in your body and being attuned to yourself and the other person or people involved that's going to make the sex amazing.
How can couples improve their sex life then? I suppose it all starts with a chat.
It can start with the chat. I think especially if you're in a relationship, a longer term relationship, you're probably going to need to talk a bit more about sex over time. You know, ideally, people are talking about it right from the start. But, you know, that's also, you know, I would say particularly it's more common with the younger generations that people will have like their sex menus. They'll talk about their, you know, kind of boundaries, sexual boundaries, all sorts of stuff before they actually hop into the sack. But I would say for people kind of outside of Gen Z who are older than that, then they're often, needing to put a bit of effort into that mm-hmm. chat, sometimes like a few weeks or months into being with that person or whatever, because we haven't been taught how to do it. No. But it definitely does begin with being able to have better communication during sex, after it, and definitely before.
Can you give some insider tips then for being great in bed and having amazing sex?
Oh, yes, I can. Okay, so I would say part of it, some of the things are like check in regularly during sex with the other person, how they're doing. It doesn't mean that you have to ruin the mood by being like, you know, let's down tools and, you know, have a full kind of heart to heart. But just checking in, being like, how are you doing? You okay? You finding this hot? You good? You know, caring about the other person's pleasure as well as your own. You know, some of this is quite gendered. You know, in the past, we found that men have tended to care more about their pleasure. They're having a lot more orgasms during sex with women than women are having, and women are having lots more orgasms when they're having sex with other women. But you know, people who care about each other's pleasure, that is really hot and a turn on and generally makes for great sex. You want to care about safety and not object to using protection, being happy to share your STI status, you know, being very comfortable and open about that, basically making the other person feel kind of safe and wanted and desired, which there's only so much that you can know about how they're going to feel safe, but that is generally a tip to be able to talk about. And then also taking guidance, you know, being able to be really good at going like, would you like that faster, slower, or asking someone, let me know what would really, you know, tip you over the edge in a good way here. And that doesn't, again, have to be a long conversation unless you're both, or however many of you there are, really into that. But definitely that's one. And a last one I would say is about practicing aftercare. You know, that you don't just kind of finish up sex because you've had an orgasm or whatever it is, you finish your scene and mm-hmm. you know, just kind of get up and off you go, that there's aftercare involved, that you sit and chat, you might have a bit of a, doesn't have to be a full debrief, although it might, have a cuddle, you know, have some snacks and, you know, maybe a cup of tea or something together mm-hmm. and just be able to kind of connect kind of outside of the sexual time, whether or not you're, you know, in a long-term relationship. It doesn't have to be that you're being incredibly loving and tender with each other necessarily, but
respectful.
That aftercare is often really important.
What is the significance of emotional connection in great sex?
Yeah, so some people, this is really varied. You know, a lot of people will say that the emotional connection is the most important thing for them, that when they feel connected to the other person, they feel safe, they feel respected, they feel desired, that those are the things that make it feel amazing. And, you know, you also have to look at, you know, between, like, no two people are going to say that emotional connection for them is the exact same thing as it is for the next person. So you kind of have to start by going, well, what do I even mean by emotional connection? And then there are some people who find a variety of types of sex, some of which have very little emotional connection, mm-hmm. can be really exciting and fulfilling. And sometimes we might have periods in our life where we really don't want to have emotional connection during sex. So I would say, you know, it's not that it's something that necessarily makes sex great inherently, but it also doesn't mean that if there isn't very much emotional connection, that therefore it's terrible sex. So it's really going to depend on where you're at in your life and what's happening with that person. But a lot of people do feel as though emotional connection is really what kind of brings you to a place of it feeling sort of absolutely amazing, kind of transcendental sort of stuff.
How can someone overcome sexual performance anxiety during sex?
Okay. So it usually requires a kind of multifaceted approach, you know, depending on what we mean by performance anxiety. That usually refers to people with penises, men, feeling as though they're worried that they won't last long enough, that they won't be able to get hard to begin with, you know, that they'll orgasm too kind of quickly or at a time that they don't want to ejaculate or orgasm. So that's something that, you know, you can spend lots of time with talking with partners, whatever the gender, whatever the genitals, you know, kind of learning relaxation techniques, learning how to pause, learning how to change up the position or the type of pressure or sensitivity, you know, on your genitals, particularly, that might mean that it gives you a bit of extra time, and being able to communicate, you know, with your partner to say, oh, just, you know, need to pause for a minute because you know that you're getting very close to orgasming, you know, and just kind of slow down. Or it might be if you have trouble, you know, getting hard to begin with, you know, to in getting and maintaining an erection, just kind of knowing, like, you know, does it mean that you need a bit more time? Sometimes your body is different to your mind. You know, your mind might be saying, I'm all go, and your body might be saying, oh, I'm not sure about this yet. So just listening to your body and going, right, if it takes me a bit of time to warm up and feel, you know, for my body to feel kind of safe enough with someone to be able to, you know, get and maintain an erection, then knowing that about yourself means that you can communicate that rather than expecting yourself to perform like how you've seen in mainstream porn, which is completely unrealistic.
How can couples handle then differences in sexual desire or preferences?
Yeah, so this is obviously very common. You know, I would say it happens in all couples to some degree. You know, you might have periods of time where you have the same level of desire. But sometimes even if you have the same level of desire, you're not necessarily, or even types of desires, you know, it might be that because of your, like, work hours, you know, your kind of your rhythms with sleep, you know, childcare, all sorts of possible things, that even if you have the same level of libido, you're still going to struggle to be able to kind of make it work with how often you want to have sex and in what ways. So it goes back to communication, sitting down, taking time. You might need to do that, you know, every week, just check in with each other. What nights this week might be good for us to connect? It doesn't have to mean that you're saying you'll definitely have sex or a particular type of sex, but just kind of, you know, putting aside time and also checking in with how you're feeling sexually. Sometimes you might just feel like particularly, you know, kind of exhausted, frumpy. Maybe you're on a certain medication that makes you feel really unsexual. So just being able to talk about that stuff as well, because there's no couple that just kind of naturally falls into a rhythm that really, really suits, you know, both people long term. So just chat about it.
And lastly, what are some questions you can ask yourself and partners about sex to make it better for everyone?
Ooh, there's so many. So things like, what are my desires and boundaries? You know, doing something like, you know, a sex menu, you know, either on your own or doing that with a partner. You can find loads of templates online if you just search sex menu. And some more questions would be, have I communicated my desires and boundaries to my partner? If not, what do I need to feel safe enough to do that? Or what would be a good time to do that? Things like, how can I create a comfortable and safe environment environment for both me and my partner or partners. You can ask yourself, what role does emotional connection play mm-hmm. in my sexual experiences? What are some new things I'd like to try or explore with my partners? How might I manage sexual performance anxiety or nervousness around sex? Checking in with yourself, am I attuned to my partner's cues and needs during sex? If not, what kind of conversations might we need to have about body language and about consent and the ways in which we communicate that would make that better? And something else would be about, you know, what aftercare or kind of mm-hmm. post-sex rituals do me and my partner kind of prefer, or what do we find fulfilling and enjoyable? So those are some things that you can ask yourself and talk about with your partners.
Interesting. I never thought much about the aftercare or the debrief yeah. after and how important that can be. So that's something I've picked up. And a lot of text coming in. I just want to read one. Yeah. Hi Jen, male 38 here. What about actually finishing? I've no problem in getting or keeping arousal, but I've been told I have delayed ejaculation, but sometimes it varies.
Yeah, so you know, sometimes the kind of terms can be helpful to us. You know, it's a bit like having labels or diagnoses or whatever. Some of them can be helpful for getting us a handle on what's going on for us. But often, you know, those terms can be very biased mm-hmm. and also not necessarily kind of hold in mind the range of circumstances, because what delayed, you know, kind of ejaculation is to one person could potentially be premature to someone else. So I think kind of looking at, like, you know, who's saying this, you know, is actually what the person who maybe has said this to this person who's written in, if it's a partner who they're having sex with, it might just be that what they're saying is, actually, I get a bit uncomfortable and need more lube because, you know, the sex goes on a very long time before you ejaculate. Or they might mean that they, you know, kind of get bored because, you know, the same kind of activity or the way in which mm-hmm. you're having sex is happening for a long time. So it doesn't really tell you much about what's actually happening for the other person. Or if this person, you know, recognizes that it takes them, like, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes of penetrative sex to be able to ejaculate, that's quite a lot. It doesn't mean that there's something wrong with them, but it might mean that there's other toys or activities that you can do during sex, or ways in which you can support each other during sex or masturbation or whatever it is, so that, you know, everyone involved is having a lovely time, and you also don't necessarily have to be so focused on the ejaculation. It's also possible for people with penises to learn to orgasm without ejaculating, which can be an exciting one for some people. And yeah, I would say, you know, putting less pressure on yourself, but having more communication around mm-hmm. what the hell these terms mean yeah. to you and to your partners.
Hi ladies, I have a very high sex drive and I always have to make the first move with my partner. I have said it to her that sometimes it would be nice for her to make the first move, that men like to be seduced and romanced occasionally. Am I wrong to expect or want this in a sexual relationship, this texter says?
Well, you're definitely not wrong to want that, but to expect it, you know, most expectations end up in, a lot of them end up in disappointment. So, you know, what I would say is sit down and have a few more conversations about how you can help your partner feel safe enough to initiate. You know, often what happens when you have the kind of higher sex drive partner, that person often feels as though they generally always have to put the work in, and the kind of lower sex drive partner often feels kind of a bit on the back foot, that they're sort of like bracing themselves, like, oh God, the other person is going to want to, you know, have loads more sex than me, and that they're kind of just, you know, also sort of taking it for granted that the higher libido person is going to be the one doing the initiating. So I think what you've said there is great. You know, have more chats about it with your partner. Do your best to not kind of blame them. You know, you don't need to go away from this conversation and say, well, I heard on the radio that you should be initiating with me more, so you better start doing that. You know, that's not going to go down well. Your partner is going to be like, well, you know, no, or they'll say that they're going to do it and then they're not going to do it because they're not going to feel comfortable and supported to do it. So really sit down, chat about how you can both, you know, comfortably initiate, the ways in which you can do that, because sometimes people just have lack of familiarity with that, particularly women who are having sex with men. You know, they can find that we're socialized to find it more difficult to be the one to go, hey, let's go and have a roll around.
Somebody just texted in saying, my husband and I haven't had sex in 5 or 6 years. I wish we could have that connection. We love each other, but I just don't know what to do.
Yeah. and you can have that connection. Sometimes it is easiest to go and see a, you know, couples therapist, specifically a sex therapist. They will give you different, you know, kind of exercises, strategies, different practices with each other, a little bit of homework so that you can get back to, you know, being able to find your way with each other. Because often, you know, it could be through having children, through living together, through things being very domestic. Sometimes it's to do with the fact that one person doesn't want penetrative sex in the way that the other person expects or wants or is used to. You know, there's so many things that come in here. Shame, bodies changing over time, stress getting to us, just getting out of the habit. You know, we can be incredibly comfortable with each other and know each other very well. But often, you know, over time, particularly with very long-term relationships, it can feel as though there's ends up being these no-go areas, specifically around sex is very common. And so it can mean that even though we love each other very much and feel very, you know, generally kind of maybe comfortable, safe and happy and even satisfied in the relationship, that sex takes an absolute nosedive. So it can be really helpful to start to, you know, just chat with each other about how you might make space for that again and what that might look like. And if it feels too painful and difficult or you're just really avoiding it, then get someone else involved, you know, a professional who can really make things a lot easier for you to be able to communicate and mm-hmm. get back on it.
Great advice. Rachel, thank you so much. There we go. That is Rachel Cook, our psychotherapist and mental health consultant. She is on Instagram if you want to check her out, at Rachel Jane Cook with the knee on the end, with lots of tips and tricks on there as well. She's back on Wednesday. She's here every Wednesday. And we're going to be talking about relationships. And we're going to look at, what do we actually need from a partner, apart from a break? I'm only asking, what do we actually need from a partner? If you have any questions on that, you can always get in touch with the show, jen@orty.ie.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.